Russia, for the United States, and for everybody concerned. And it's an honor to be with you.
Meeting on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany, Trump and Russian President Putin discuss various things, and he anticipates future developments that are beneficial to both countries. Putin said he was delighted to meet Trump. It's unclear if that congenial tone will last after they get into some issues that have put the U.S. and Russia at odds, including possibly the Russian meddling in the U.S. election and Moscow's backing of the Syrian regime and its encroachment on Ukraine. Egyptian officials say a suicide car bomber has attacked a military checkpoint in northern Sinai, killing 10 soldiers. There has been no claim of responsibility so far for Friday's blast. Egypt has been battling an Islamic State insurgency since 2013, when the military ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi after mass protests. Leaders from the U.S., South Korea, and Japan agreed Friday to urge the United Nations to speed up the implementation of sanctions against North Korea following the country's July 4th intercontinental missile launch. The leaders also reaffirmed their commitment to denuclearize North Korea, and they called on nations bordering North Korea to help convince North Korea to stop threatening other countries and halt its ballistic missile program. This is VOA News. On Friday, North Korean state television broadcast a statement declaring that Pyongyang developed the intercontinental ballistic missile, like the one launched early this week, to defend itself against threats from the U.S. Speaking alongside Poland's president on Thursday in Warsaw, President Trump labeled North Korea's behavior a threat and promised to confront it.
Not only must we secure our nations from the threat of terrorism, but we must also confront the threat from North Korea. And that's what it is. It's a threat. And we will confront it very strongly. President Duda and I call on all nations to confront this global threat and publicly demonstrate to North Korea that there are consequences for their very, very bad behavior.
Trump also said he is not one to draw red lines or talk about his plans, but that he has some pretty severe things in mind as it pertains to North Korea, but he did not elaborate. Street violence and gang shootings are on the rise in many big cities around the world. One of those cities, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which sees an average of 15 gun battles daily. And innocent bystanders are often caught in the crossfire. But people in Rio can now avoid street violence thanks to several smartphone applications. Get more in the story from VOA's Zadika Hoke.
The latest app, known as OTT, short for Where There Is a Shootout in Portuguese, was developed by a group of volunteers. The app shows users where a shooting has occurred so they can avoid the area. It also sends alerts to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and other social media. The group says their alerts reach nearly 3 million people, almost half the population of Rio de Janeiro. Violent crime has risen by 11% in the first half of this year compared to the same period last year. More than 2,300 people were killed in the first 5 months of 2017. Details about shootouts, location, injuries, fatalities, and other vital information are sourced by users. The app also fills a statistical void since the city does not compile data on shootouts. In order to avoid false alarms, both programs adhere to strict operating standards. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Authorities say 28 inmates were killed in a fight between rival gangs in a state prison in the Mexican Pacific Resort of Acapulco. Security officials were able to regain control of that prison late in the day on Thursday. And UN-sponsored talks in Switzerland aimed at ending a stalemate that has kept the island of Cyprus divided for more than four decades have ended without an agreement. And two Americans, one Spaniard, are the first casualties of the opening of the running of the bulls in Spain. I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Over the last couple of months, the numbers have been increasing by their hundreds almost every week. So police just said they had to move in because the area was just completely clogged. There are people sleeping on the pavement in parks nearby. There's virtually no access to water, sanitation.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris explaining why police evacuated about 3,000 migrants from a makeshift camp. Details coming up. Also, 26 soldiers have been killed or wounded in an attack by ISIS militants in Egypt's Sinai region. And a range of issues of interest to Africa, including jobs and investment, will be discussed at the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, it was a violent day in the Sinai in Egypt. The military reports 26 soldiers have been killed or wounded in an attack by ISIS militants. The attack was launched on a checkpoint in the city of Rafah in North Sinai on the border with the Gaza Strip. The military claims to have killed at least 40 of the attackers. Militants launch frequent attacks against soldiers and police in the Sinai, killing hundreds over the past several years. Also, the Associated Press reports three Egyptian civilian construction workers were reportedly killed this week when military aircraft mistakenly targeted their vehicle. The military has not yet commented on the accident, which reportedly occurred in the western desert. In late 2015, the military was blamed in the death of 12 civilians when their tourist convoy was attacked by mistake. Today, the world's top economies hold a two-day summit in Hamburg, Germany. On pressing economic and geopolitical issues, the G20 meeting will discuss a range of issues of interest to Africa, including jobs and investment. Talita Bertel-Saman-Scott is the head of the Economic Policy Program at the South Africa Institute of International Affairs in Cape Town. She spoke with reporter William Eagle about a new program supported by the G20, the Compact with Africa.
So the G20 is currently under the German presidency, and each year the presidents choose a specific topic that they want to focus on for that particular year. And Germany has chosen to focus on Africa, and specifically it has focused on Africa because of the significant migration crisis that it has been experiencing since 2014. And there's a recognition in Germany that to simply close borders will not solve the crisis. There has to be action in Africa to ensure that there's sustained economic growth and opportunities for people to stay in Africa. So there have been two initiatives that have come out of Germany this year. The one is within the context of the G20, which is the Compact with Africa, and it comes out of the German Finance Ministry, which typically leads within the G20. And the second one is the Marshall Plan for Africa, which is an unfortunate name, so I've heard some people refer to it as the Merkel Plan for Africa. And this has come out of the Development Ministry. And both these plans focus specifically on the enabling environment, the enabling business environment in African countries to ensure that they can attract sustained investment specifically into infrastructure projects. Now, the Compact with Africa has this exclusive focus, whereas the Marshall Plan also brings in aspects of peace and security and democracy and the rule of law, which is a more comprehensive approach, and it's more a traditional approach of overseas development assistance and collaboration. Whereas the Compact with Africa within the G20 context is a plan that countries have been asked to sign up to. And when they sign up to it, they commit themselves to implementing specific reform measures that will be decided upon in consultation with the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank. These measures does make one think back to the structural adjustment programs of the 1980s and the 1990s, which had detrimental effects on African countries. But as far as I know and as far as we've seen, there's nothing about privatization of healthcare or any state assets or anything like that within the compact under the G20.
How are these compacts, or how is this specific compact with Africa broadly, and the Marshall Plan, part of the larger EU effort to enhance employment in Africa? And, of course, what would be of most important to the EU, limit migration from Africa?
Absolutely. So the thinking behind all of these measures do come, I would say, from self-interest on the European Union's part. They've seen massive social disruption, negative economic impact from the flow of migrants that have come not only from Syria but also from Africa since, say, 2014. So there's been a lot of thinking around how do you ensure that people do not migrate to Europe apart from closing borders? How do you create an environment on the African continent that the people would be encouraged to stay, that there would be opportunities for them, that they can see a future for their children on the continent?
Why has South Africa not signed up for the compact?
South Africa is the only African country that forms part of the G20. So, in effect, it forms part of the thinking and sort of the donor grouping behind the compact with Africa. So, from that perspective, it wouldn't be expected to sign up to the compact. But secondly, then also South Africa is in an interesting position because it is still part of Africa, and it would benefit tremendously from an Africa that develops more rapidly, you know, just because there'll be such a huge market for South African products. But also South Africa suffers a lot from the same impacts from migration and refugees that do not head north but come south towards South Africa. So South Africa has a strong vested interest in these compacts working out. If we imagine a scenario in which South Africa would be asked to sign up to the compact and to be a beneficiary of the Marshall Plan, I think it would find it difficult. In recent years, it has changed its investment laws quite dramatically to ensure that foreign direct investment takes cognizance of South Africa's broad-based black economic empowerment policies. So it wouldn't open itself up to conditionalities from the IMF and the World Bank that would in any way limit that policy or South Africa's ability to implement that policy.
That's Talita Bertel-Saman-Scott, the head of the Economic Policy Program and South African Institute of International Affairs. She was speaking with reporter William Eagle. French police evacuated nearly 3,000 migrants from a growing makeshift camp in Paris today. The move comes just days before the government proposes new measures for asylum seekers and illegal migration. The influx of migrants and refugees has become a hot political issue, not just in France, but throughout Europe. Reporter Catherine Field is in Paris. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about today's evacuation and related issues.
Police moved in just before dawn in the northern Paris suburb where there is actually a reception center for refugees. The reason they moved in there was the reception center actually only holds places for several hundred, but migrants, asylum seekers have just been going there in the hope that somehow the doors will open there and they'll find places for them. Over the last couple of months, the numbers have been increasing by their hundreds almost every week. So police just said they had to move in because the area was just completely clogged. There are people sleeping on the pavements in parks nearby. There's virtually no access to water, sanitation. What food they get are those that are given by small local associations or by people who live in the area that have been watching these people sweltering in the summer heats there and just feel very sorry for them. This is not the first time we've seen this joke. This is the 34th operation of its type since 2015, where police have gone in and removed large numbers of refugees and migrants that are just sleeping rough in the hope that someone will take them in or the government will at least just have a look at their paperwork.
Catherine, any idea how many migrants and refugees enter France every week or so?
Well, authorities here are saying that there's about 200 arriving each week. But to be honest, I see more than that on the streets of Paris. If you just go and look at this area of northern Paris, yeah, okay, maybe there is an increase about 200 each week. But then you go slightly out of Paris and you find dozens of little shanty towns with these people just sort of covering themselves and trying to stay out of the way of authorities, just trying to get a bit of peace and quiet. You've also got, don't forget, that area in the south of France alongside the Italian border that's being closed for some months simply because of the new influx of migrants. So you've got people turning up there, coming over the hills and the mountains there. So to be honest, I think this figure they're coming up with of 200 a week is well low of the mark.
Now, I understand in a few days the Ministry of the Interior is going to present some new measures on asylum seekers and illegal migration. Can you tell us about that?
This new proposal they're going to come up with next week has really been pushed along by the mayor of Paris. And 2 days ago, she said, look, Paris can do whatever it can to help these people, but it needs to come from the government. The government is actually at the moment in a position where it can do something because it's summer holidays here and the schools have all closed. So they do have facilities such as school gymnasiums, even classrooms that are empty that they can put these migrants into these places, go through their paperwork and at least get them off the street. So that's what we're looking at. But again, we're going to get to the same problem for the French authorities, that is that they're looking for a European solution. They're looking to the European neighbours to help out. They're not getting any help, particularly when you look at the countries in Eastern Europe, Poland, the Visegrad countries. They don't want any more migrants. They say they're full. And we're now seeing countries such as Austria taking really tougher measures to make sure that there are no new migrants. So it's a bit of a pipe dream if the French government thinks they're going to be able to get that help. They are also, don't forget, under a lot of criticism here in France because the Calais jungle, the area that we've talked about before for the last couple of years that the French government closed down last year, well, migrants have started going back to that area again, hiding out in the forests around there. The government has been trying to keep that area clean. It hasn't succeeded, and local authorities have now given in after many months and said, well, okay, we will let some of the local NGOs set up showers and perhaps drinking stations up there. So it's going to be difficult for the government because just look at the figures of how many people are arriving. We've had, 101,000 migrants come across the sea to Western Europe so far this year. It's a huge issue, and France just will not be able to deal with it themselves. On top of that, Joe, these are guys who have come back. A lot of the Afghanis that I talked to in the last couple of days who were rounded up this morning, this is their second time in Europe. They'd come here a couple of years ago. They'd been sent back to Afghanistan, and they decided, well, you know, their life was in danger in Afghanistan. They couldn't live even in Kabul. So they'd actually come back to Europe, not just to get asylum, but just to be somewhere that might be on the side of a Paris street, but at least they are safe.
That's reporter Catherine Field from Paris. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. At the G20 summit, leaders will consider a proposal to impose U.S. sanctions against those smuggling migrants to Europe. European Council President Donald Tusk says his proposal includes freezing assets and imposing travel bans. He says human smuggling is an organized crime that generated more than $1.5 billion for smugglers in Libya alone last year. Libya is the main departure point for migrants trying to reach Europe. In related news, former Italian Premier Matteo Renzi says Italy should accept only a fixed number of refugees. Currently, it receives most of those crossing the Mediterranean. Renzi says Italy should consider not paying its due to the EU if it does not get more help to deal with the crisis. Nineteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. While much attention in Africa is paid to diseases such as malaria and HIV/AIDS, there's another rapidly growing health threat. New research warns of the human and financial impact that diabetes and obesity will have on the continent. Diabetes causes blood sugar levels to be too high. Left untreated, it could cause blindness, kidney failure, heart attacks, and stroke. The Lancet Medical Journal says the financial cost of diabetes in Africa could double to $60 billion a year over the next 13 years. AFP reports this includes the cost of medication, hospital admissions, and loss of productivity as workers fall ill or die from the disease. Diabetes mostly has been a Western disease, but no more. The Lancet says type 2 diabetes in Africa has followed the rise of the middle class, who can spend more money on junk food. That's brought a sharp rise in obese people on the continent. In addition, more people have sedentary lifestyles. Currently, just 1 in 10 Africans who have diabetes receive the necessary medication, and many don't even realize they have the disease. Nearly 20 NGOs have sent a joint statement to the Tanzanian government calling on it to stop threatening rights groups. AFP reports Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and others say the government should end its hostile rhetoric against those campaigning for gay rights and others helping teenage mothers get an education. Last month, Tanzanian President John Magufuli said girls who became pregnant should be barred from school. The government has threatened to deregister NGOs that are helping girls return to school after pregnancy. Magufuli also said foreigners campaigning for gay rights would be arrested and deported, even if it meant losing international aid. Boko Haram has lost as much as 70% of its war equipment and fighters. That's the assessment of defense officials from the five countries involved in the joint task force fighting the militants. But the officials who gathered in Cameroon this week to discuss the war effort admit their own troops face challenges mostly involving funding. Moki Edwin Kenzaka has the story from Yaoundé.
Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Benin contribute the 7,000 soldiers that make up the multinational joint task force battling Boko Haram. Defense officials from the five countries said this week that economic challenges caused by the global slump in commodity prices are taking a toll on the war effort. They said it has become difficult to mount attacks on Boko Haram locations as they lack the resources to keep adequate standby troops stationed at frontier bases like Mora in northern Cameroon. Cameroonian General Donatien Milingi Numa spoke on behalf of the group.
Nous ne sommes pas financés comme une force onusienne.
He says they are a sub-regional force and do not have the same resources as a UN peacekeeping mission. But he says they will not relent because the Lake Chad Basin Commission member states are suffering from severe terrorism threats. He says they received contributions from the international community like the European Union and the United Kingdom and are expecting more. The Lake Chad Basin Commission created the regional force in 2015 with an anticipated budget of $700 million. But the defense officials said less than 50% of the promised money has been delivered. In June, Cameroon arrested 30 of its soldiers in the task force after they protested over salary, saying they are not being paid enough. This week, the defense ministers resolved that each country will negotiate salary agreements with their respective militaries, while the regional force will provide additional weapons to the troops. The joint task force has succeeded in retaking much of the territory Boko Haram once held in Nigeria. However, that success has brought fresh challenges, said General Ahmed Mohamed, who is in charge of training and operations at the Nigerian Defense Headquarters.
They have been degraded substantially, but because of that, they have now broken into smaller splinters and it's becoming much more difficult to harness our resources to deal with them decisively.
The defense chiefs said these factions lack coordination and have resorted to regular suicide attacks in recent months, which have caused more people to flee their homes, intensifying the regional humanitarian crisis. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In the DRC, eight soldiers have been sentenced for the deaths of civilians in Kasai province last year. Two soldiers were sentenced to 20 years in prison, while three others received 15-year sentences. Others received shorter prison terms. The soldiers went on trial after a video surfaced of Congolese troops walking among the bodies of at least 20 civilians. The government is battling a local militia in Kasai. The UN and others say as many as 3,000 people have been killed in the region and more than 1 million displaced. And no more miniskirts and large earrings for female civil servants in Uganda. Male staff are now required to wear a jacket and a tie. The Ugandan government instituted a new dress code for public workers this week, and it continues to anger some people. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Women activists in Uganda have criticized the new dress code for civil servants as a distraction from the real issues in the country. Perry Aretua is the executive director of Women's Democracy Network.
Is she saying that men do not have any type of self-control? When a girl is dressed a certain way, that doesn't mean she's calling for your attention. Let us focus on the real issues that Ugandans are grappling with. The theft of our public resources, the inefficiency in service delivery, the absenteeism in public service, the capacity needs that public service has.
The Ministry of Public Service issued the directive on decent dressing Tuesday. It prohibits female staff from wearing tight clothing, open-toed shoes and skirts, or dresses above the knees. Bright colored nail polish, hair extensions, exaggerated makeup, and chandelier earrings are also on the banned list. The directive didn't spare men either. All male officers are required to dress in neat dark trousers, but not ones that are tight-fitting. And only closed-toe black and brown shoes should be worn to the office, along with a jacket and tie. Adam Wanga is the human resource manager of the Ministry of Public Service. She defends the new measures.
People in Uganda have a perception of what a public officer should look like, and this is the image we are trying to protect and preserve. We are saying not above the knee. And for one reason, above the knee, you know what it means? It can also tantamount to sexual harassment. Because when you sit, you're exposing your thighs, which is not generally accepted. And it can distract others from work.
Rights groups say the previous 2010 public order requiring dress to be neat and practical for one's job was sufficient. Ugandans have penned opinion pieces in local media against the dress code, with one lawyer writing that rights aren't taken away overnight, they are taken away in small bits. The state-owned newspaper published photos it said were taken Wednesday of three civil servants, a man and two women, not adhering to the new dress code. VOA caught up with one public worker who declined to give her name.
Yeah, I think my bright eyes can't distract someone, so the government should not discuss about that. Eh?
The penalties for disobeying the new dress code are unclear. The directive simply said cases would be referred to the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Public Service. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. And tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Pete Hundley, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Sports. 40. Greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Our starting line on the sunny side of sports is African athletics. South Africa's Olympic 400-meter champion Wade Van Niekerk is in fine form ahead of next month's World Championships in London. Van Niekerk set a meet record of 43.62 seconds at the IAAF Diamond League meet in Lausanne, Switzerland. That's also the fastest time in the world this year. Two athletes from Botswana, Babaloki Tebe and Isaac Makwala, finished second and third in the race. Tebe set a personal best of 44.02 seconds in Lausanne, while Makwala clocked 44.08 seconds. Ethiopian athletes also ran very well in Switzerland, winning three races. Mukhtar Idris won the men's 5,000 meters race, hitting the tape in 12 minutes, 55.23 seconds. That's also the fastest time in the world this year. Another Ethiopian, Aman Wote, won the men's 1,500 meters race in 3 minutes and 32.20 seconds. And the third Ethiopian victory came in the women's mile race. Genzeba Dibaba had a winning time of just over 4 minutes and 16 seconds. And here are a few fun facts about 26-year-old Genzeba Dibaba. She's the younger sister of Ethiopia's three-time Olympic champion, 32-year-old Tirunesh Dibaba. Genzeba won a silver medal in the women's 1500 meters event at last year's Rio Olympics in Brazil. She's also the reigning world champion at that distance and the world record holder as well. Genzeba Dibaba also has set multiple world indoor records at 1500 meters, 2000 meters, 3000 meters, and 5000 meters, as well as the mile and the two-mile races. Genzeba Dibaba, like Wade Van Niekerk, has to be considered one of the gold medal favorites at the IAAF World Championships in London, which begin August 4th. Another strong contender for a medal in London is Burundi's Olympic silver medalist, Francine Niyonsaba. Francine won the women's 800 meters race in Lausanne, clocking 1 minute and 56.82 seconds.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. VOAnews.com.
VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. American tennis player Bethany Mattox Sands is out of Wimbledon after suffering a horrific knee injury in her second-round match against Romania's Sorana Kirstia. The 32-year-old Mattox Sands was attacking the net and looking to play a volley when her right knee buckled and she collapsed to the court, screaming out in pain as she asked for help. Paramedics gave her lengthy treatment, including oxygen, but her screams could still be heard on nearby courts. Mattox Sands was taken away on a stretcher to a local hospital with what Wimbledon officials described as an acute knee injury. Mattox Sands suffered a torn ligament in the same knee 4 years ago. Her opponent, Sorana Kirstia, reacted to the gruesome injury at the post-match news conference.
I crossed over and then I saw the knee, and I've never seen anything like this in my life. Bethany is my friend, you know, and we get along so well, and she's an unbelievable girl. And you don't even want this to happen to your worst enemy, but to your friend, you know. So I think that, I don't know, there are sports where you see something's happening and you see it straight away, the help, you know, like, I know, football, box, or all the others, you know, it's straight away. Which here, I mean, it took a while. So, of course, you wonder, well, what happened if it was a heart issue or something like this? Yes, of course.
Sorana Kirstia and other professional tennis players sent Bethany Mattox Sands well wishes on social media. Kirstia tweeted, and I quote, "Heartbroken for what happened to Bethany Mattox Sands. I love you, girl. You are strong. You will get through it. My thoughts are with you, Beth." Bethany Mattox Sands is known primarily as a doubles specialist in professional tennis. She and American Jack Sock won a gold medal in mixed doubles at last year's Rio Olympics. Bethany Mattox Sands has also won 5 Grand Slam titles in women's doubles and 2 more in mixed doubles. It's time to climb between the ropes once again with our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Good evening, Nnamdi.
And a good evening, Sunny.
August 26th in Las Vegas, the money man Floyd Mayweather Jr. will go up against the Irish mixed martial artist Conor McGregor. Both fighters released training videos. Nnamdi, your thoughts on the videos?
Sonny, everybody looks good when you hit in a bag. you can go down to your garage and install a bag, get your boxing gloves, put a mirror next to it. You will look like a monster. You know why? Because the bag will not hit you back. You know, that's a secret to everybody looking good in the. Well, we've seen Floyd Money Mayweather's video. What did we expect? Fast hands, he's ready to go. And come August 26th, he will do his thing.
Did you think he has lost any speed, Nnamdi?
Not at all. I mean, this man is always in shape, you know, and he's yet to take a beating from any fighter. And he's the best defensive fighter of all, for all time, I would say. And Conor McGregor may not even, you know, the MC Hammer song, can't touch this.
Touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
All night. You can't touch this.
Nnamdi, what about McGregor? What are some of your takeaways from his video?
It was a good video, though. It showed me that he can punch. He's got power. Remember, Sonny, he's a southpaw. He's a lefty. And Mayweather has problem fighting lefties. But looking at that video right there, Mayweather is not going to stand and wait for him to do anything he can. It could end up being a boring fight till Mayweather knocks him out.
Mm.
The video he released just shows that he has no business fighting Floyd Mayweather August 26th, but he has a business of going to the bank August 28th, 29th.
And Namdi, in terms of going to the bank, I mean, there's reports that Mayweather could possibly exceed what he made against Manny Pacquiao. Any latest updates on the financial front?
Come on, Sonny. I think in the history of boxing, we will never, never see anybody like Floyd Mayweather. Remember, this fight is going to make more than $600 million, Sonny. And not only that, Floyd Mayweather is a co-promoter, Sonny. He gets his guarantee for $150 million on the front end.
Mm.
And on the back end, when the pay-per-view bread is broken, he will pick up another $75 to another $100 million. Tell me that's not crazy paper or banking, Sonny. It's a great fight, though.
And this will clearly be the biggest payday of McGregor's career, Namdi?
McGregor is guaranteed $100 million, man. The last biggest payday for him was $5 million. So you go make the calculation, bro.
Namdi, there's still talk of Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko having a rematch. What's the latest there?
Klitschko is yet to trigger his rematch clause, but he made it clear to the promoter of AJ that he will not go back to the UK for a rematch, which means forget about the 90,000 at Wembley or Cardiff or anywhere else in the UK. What we're looking at now, they are mentioning Nigeria, they are mentioning Dubai, they're mentioning Las Vegas.
What do you think is the likely choice, Namdi?
It's not going to be Tafawa Balewa Square in Lagos or Abuja Stadium. It's going to be the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Take that to the bank, Sonny.
Will we see it at the end of 2017?
Klitschko better make up his mind quickly because the calendar for 2017, you know, it's loaded. You got two big ones in the summer, Triple G, Conor McGregor, and Mayweather. Then you still have your Adrian Broner and all this. The calendar is loaded, so if you're going to do it. But the good thing about Las Vegas and T-Mobile Arena, it's indoor stadium, and it's going to sell out quick. People will come from everywhere. Imagine the fight fans coming in from the UK. They will drink, they will spend money. So it may not be in October. I would say more like November, December. Gives them enough time to do the promotions, and it's going to be a good one.
Andre Ward recently stopped Sergey Kovalev in a rematch. Like Pacquiao Horn, it was controversial, Namdi. The Kovalev camp saying Ward was throwing low blows throughout the fight, including at the end. Your thoughts?
Sonny, the crusher is just a big talker. He's a sorry loser. He lost that fight. He wasn't able to make adjustments from the first fight. This is a clear case of effective body punching by Andre Ward. This is a guy that we believe cannot even break an egg. Suddenly knocks out a puncher, stops a puncher. But he was effective with the body shots, and that body shots took a lot out of Kovalev. Kovalev now blaming the referee for the low blow. It was not low blow. It's what we call borderline in the fight game. If you look at the fight closely, Kovalev was looking for an excuse to bail out because, you know, I mean, he was being pounded and he didn't expect it. All the trash talk he said before the fight, like pillow-fisted puncher, he called Andre Ward, called him all kinds of names, but he couldn't back it up. So now he's blaming the referee, he's blaming this person. I think it's time for Kovalev to just go away or move up in weight because two fights, we're not going to take a rematch. No rematch.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta.
You can't touch this. Touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What am I doing? Touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, can't touch this. Look in my eyes, man, you can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the funky lyrics. Touch this. Fresh new kicks and bands, you got it like that, now you know you wanna dance.
touch this. Why you standing there, man? You can't touch this. Yo, sound the bell. School is in, sucker. You can't touch this. Give me a song, a rhythm, making them sweat. That's what I'm giving them now. They know. You're talking about the hammer. You're talking about a show that's hyped and tight. Singles are sweating so fast, I'm a white boy. Well, quit that word because you know you can't touch this. You can't touch this. Break it down. Stop. Hammer time. Go with the flow. It is said. Touch this. Look, man, you can't touch this. You better get a hype, boy, because you know you can't touch this. Ring the bell, school's back in. Break it down. Stop. Hammer time. Touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. Break it down. Stop. Hammer time. Every time you see me, that hammer's just so hype.
That's Stanley Kirk Burrell, better known by his stage name MC Hammer, with his big 1990 hit and signature song, You Can't Touch This. It's not Hammer time, it's sports social media time with VOA's Doug Bernard. Happy Friday, Doug.
Happy Friday. I think it was a wise idea for him to change his name to MC Hammer. I'll just go with that.
What's trending out there in the sports world, Doug?
Well, I know you mentioned a little bit earlier this tragedy at Wimbledon. Bethany Mattek-Sands, who took a very bad spill. Very distressing scenes. Well, lots of people tweeting out their support for her, their well wishes, people from, plain old ordinary fans to really some legendary tennis figures. Martina Navratilova, herself a 9-time, I think, singles winner, tweeted out, "I'm just devastated about Bethany Mattek-Sands and her injury. We are all behind you, hoping for the best, lots of love."
Mm.
Chris Everett, also herself, something of a legend, I think, added, she tweeted out, "Going over the day and remembering B. Mattek," that's her Twitter handle, "in my thoughts and prayers, wishing this very special lady a speedy recovery." Here's a tweet from a fan who calls him or herself sport nut. "Distressing scenes in the Mattek-Sands match today. Even more distressing that ESPN airing the tape with the audio up." And as we may have heard,
she was screaming.
She was screaming. It was clearly, and her opponent ran over, and nobody seemed to know what to do. It was just a horrible scene. So anyway, that's one thing that's certainly getting a lot of attention out there on Twitter today. There's another story that's getting a lot of attention on Twitter. We mentioned, we perhaps gave a bit of a setup for this yesterday. We were talking about the NBA free agency, and players are now sort of shopping themselves around, seeing the best deals that they can get. Well, Tim Hardaway Jr., who was originally drafted by the New York Knicks back in 2013, although it may be 14, I may have those numbers wrong.
Okay.
He was originally drafted by them. They let him go. He went off to another team, and now the Knicks have re-signed him. Tim Hardaway Jr. Now has a deal with the New York Knicks for $71 million in over 4 years. $71 million. Dollars over 4 years. I'm still trying to let that sink in, and a lot of people on Twitter are trying to let that sink in as too. It doesn't seem to be helping very much. Here's just a number of examples. Chris Zabadie tweets out, "I don't think I'm ready to live in a world where Tim Hardaway Jr. is worth $71 million over 4 years." Let's see. Kristen 34 has this to say: "Good morning to everybody. Except Knicks fans justifying their offer sheet to Tim Hardaway Jr. It's a typically stupid Knicks move." Not a big Knicks fan there, I guess, or not a fan at least of this deal that's been offered. One more: "The Knicks really just gave Tim Hardaway Jr. an amount of money 29 other teams wouldn't offer him, even if the number denomination." I'm sorry, was in yen. You know, Tim Hardaway Jr., interesting player, but, you know, has really not been, I mean, if you're thinking players that
not,
are...
Not a superstar.
No, and like, especially this last year, I mean, I think he was averaging maybe 14 points a game. I mean, just, you know, a good player, but, wow. Anyway, it's... Mine is not to argue why.
Well, Doug, we're about a week into cycling's premier event. What's the latest from France?
Yes, indeed. Well, Marcel Kittel, the German giant, has won his third stage. It was the seventh stage today. He won his third stage today in a photo finish. It couldn't have gotten much closer. I mean, I've seen racehorses, you know, snout to snout at that line before. I've never really quite seen it at the, but at they have photo finishes there. He won. That gives him the green jersey, and which means he's the points leader. Chris Froome still has the yellow jersey. But I just wanted to mention one player that's not getting a lot of attention, but he is in his home nation. It's Tabu Gourmet. He's one of five riders from Africa, and the very first ever Ethiopian rider ride in the Tour de France and to turn pro. Not expecting necessarily a lot from him this year, but interesting to follow his course this year, and interesting to follow the spread of cycling, you know, outside of perhaps just South Africa in Africa.
And speaking of Africa, the overall leader, Froome, I believe, was born in Nairobi, Doug.
He was. He does have a international pedigree, although he lives on the Isle of Man now, which makes him a Briton. And they, as they call them, those who live on the Isle of Man, they're called Manxmen. I just have one last quick story. This is very short, not necessarily a social media story, but it turns out a Moninde Marube, who's a professional runner from Kenya, was practicing on a nature trail in Maine, where he lives, and he was charged at by two black bears. He couldn't go in the water because he said, "I know I can't swim." He said, "I couldn't climb up a tree because bears can climb trees." So he just ran into a vacant house, and he was just able, by the skin of his teeth.
Quick thinking.
Indeed. So good luck to him.
Thank you, Doug. VOA's Doug Bernard. And that wraps up the July 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Saif al-Adel is a fugitive and suspected high-ranking member of the Al-Qaeda terror network who was wanted in connection with the 1998 bombings of the U.S. embassies in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya. He is an Egyptian citizen with black hair and dark eyes. He is also believed to be affiliated with the Egyptian Islamic Jihad. He is also known as Ibrahim al-Madani and Muhammad Ibrahim Makawi. Hundreds of people were killed in the embassy attacks and thousands wounded, most Kenyan and Tanzanian citizens. 12 Americans died. For these and other acts, al-Adel is charged with murder, conspiracy to destroy United States property, and other crimes. The Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to al-Adel's arrest or prosecution. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on this man, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy and the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to rfj@state.gov.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. On Saturdays, tune in at 3:30 and 14:30 UTC, and on Sundays at 5:30 and 17:30 UTC. Or subscribe to the Encounter podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll review the 29th African Union Summit that was dominated by discussions on war and conflict, but also talks on investing in the African youth. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown reporting U.S. President Trump and Russian President Putin are meeting at this hour face-to-face on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. Trump told reporters that Friday's talks got off to a good start.
Your Excellency, Mr. President, we spoke over the phone with you several times. So if we want to have the positive developments in bilaterals and be able to resolve most acute international topics and issues, definitely we need personal meetings. And I'm delighted to be able to meet you personally, Mr. President, and I hope, as you have said, our meeting will yield positive results in the news for us in the U.S.
That was Mr. Putin's interpreter. Now hear from Mr. Trump.
President Putin and I have been discussing various things, and I think it's going very well. We've had some very, very good talks. We're going to have a talk now, and obviously that will continue. But we look forward to a lot of very positive things happening for Russia, for the United States, and for everybody concerned. And it's an honor to be with you.
It's unclear if that congenial tone will last after they get into some thorny issues that have put the U.S. and Russia at odds, such as the Russian meddling in the U.S. presidential election.